This is where we break through the traumas and the mental illnesses that are holding amazing parents back from their dream family life. You can find more resources at wandahoward.com. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started. You are now listening to part two of last week's podcast. But one of the things that you talked about and that you said was, now I forget the word of one of them, the name of one of the words, but you also talked about virtue signaling. And
yeah.
And look that up and stuff. So I looked up both words, and now remind me, what was the other word? I cannot think of it right now.
Ascendancy.
Ascendancy. There we go. And some of the things that I really liked about ascendancy was just this idea and recognition of basically when we're, it doesn't matter our background or our story, that we're all equal, and that helps us rise above the mediocrity as well. So it was really beautiful. But the virtue signaling, I looked up a lot of that stuff, and I'm just still kind of in this like curious state of, okay, what knowledge do you have there? And how does that help me move forward and with connection? Because all I know about virtue signaling is like, bleh. So.
So ascendancy, first of all, is such a powerful concept. The book I'm writing right now, is the title of it is Ascendancy. We'll see if that stays the title, but it's so integrated into this idea of the good and the bad, all things encompassing in our life have this component. If we live in our life, we live our life in such a way that we can't have desires for improvement, desires for self-preservation, we're kidding ourselves, right? We are wired for ascendancy. We are wired to be alive tomorrow in the most primal way. And that does require us to take action to be alive tomorrow, to provide, to earn, to excel, to, you know, all these different things. And so when we're dealing with old family feelings, ascendancy is about saying, you know, it's just that momentary flash of that's where I was. That's the reality of what I came out of. But look at where I am. And the degree to which all of your hardships of your childhood get swallowed up in the amazing life you kids have created now. Oh, my gosh. No comparison. And that drive, that ascendancy is going to continue. And it doesn't mean that there's not a little bit of a sting from some of those memories, but it goes away so quickly when we pause and look back at the abundance we have today.
It disconnects all of the, it interrupts the connection of, oh, this trigger means da 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 da, and connecting back all of the past traumas, but instead it's like, oh, this trigger that just happened, and let it flow through. Is that, do I understand that right?
Yes. And it's we're just always wrong. And we always think like these emotions we feel are so, like, we're so concrete in being able to say, you know, connect the dots back. And those emotions can change for a million reasons. Mm-hmm. And so the pathway to resolve those triggers is to first recognize the trigger as a gift. It's a chance to look closely at our emotional self. But it's a chance to look at the emotions, not the event.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a chance to then resolve those emotions, to choose those emotions, to move through them, or to take action to change them. It's a skill set that people can get really, really good at. And I have found that those who have experienced the real bigger, more dramatic hardships seem to not just embrace this skill set, but they just thrive on it. They get really, really good at it very quickly. And virtue signaling is something we all do. And it's just so fun to watch. You'll see it at church. You'll see it when you run into someone at the grocery store or whatever. And this is this idea of trying to explain to people an event in our life while protecting our sense of identity. Right? So if I'm telling you a story and about my family, and we were to go, and I'm telling you the story of the night we stayed in Las Vegas on our way to Los Angeles. And if I were virtue signaling, I would say something like, you know, and then we stayed at Las Vegas. Now, of course, we don't gamble, but when we were there, this funny thing happened, right? I would have to throw in this little clarifying so you don't misconstrue my identity. Instead of being so confident in myself, knowing that I don't gamble and not caring if you know or don't know that, I'm able to say, oh my gosh, when we were in Vegas the last time, we had this hilarious thing happen. And I can just tell you the event without sheltering and hedging and moving all these, this protectiveness around this fake, non-authentic self. And virtue signaling, that's one element of it. There's probably two or three components, but the you hear it with people all the time.
Would you say that it always hurts connection or relationships to the virtue signaling? Just because I'm thinking of, like, what if there's somebody who not gambling is just super important to them. That's a super big part of their religion. Two couples are getting together for the first time to kind of figure out each other's sense of propriety, sense of who they are, you know? And so when they add that into the conversation of, oh, we don't gamble, but okay, anyways, continuing on with their story, that the other couple could have this sense of relief of, oh, okay, that's good to know, because...
And it's always okay. Like, it just happens. Here's where it can become problematic is when the hedging and the protecting of our sense of our identity creates a false identity that we buy into.
That makes sense.
Right? You know, and it happens a lot around, you know, elements of our faith and our beliefs and our, you know, what we find socially acceptable. You and I both know there are socially acceptable addictions out there, right? Dark chocolate being one of my favorites. There are other things that people can develop an addiction to that are not socially acceptable. And if I'm trying to be authentic with people and communicate to people about events in my life or how I view the world or whatever, and I'm so hardwired to shelter and protect this entity, then it really does impede my ability to be authentic, and it does negatively affect connection and relationships. This doesn't mean we have to go around and air our dirty laundry to people, right? And it's okay to be descriptive, you know, to put in a caveat around a story or something about our life that, you know, so people don't misunderstand the meaning of the story. But as you identify this in yourself and you start to listen to it for it with other people, you'll see it everywhere. Here's another example. This one comes up all the time. Someone will need to be talked. They'll want to share something about a teenager they have that's giving them some real problems. Uh-huh. And instead of saying, oh my gosh, my 15-year-old is nuts. His brain is not developed. And like, just go right to the issue, right? They'll start by saying, you know, my 15-year-old, he's so amazing and I'm so proud of him, so many things, but there's this one little thing that's really a problem for us. Now, both are fine. But one can get in the way of you understanding the real issue.
Yeah.
And so when I hear it, I make a note of it. I kind of wonder how to steer around it and get to what someone really means. I don't correct anyone ever. I don't stop anyone and say, hey, you're virtue signaling, right? I never would do that. But it's a sign of insecurity, I think. It's a sign of conditioning, over worrying about other, you know, social perceptions to a degree that interferes with being authentic.
Yeah.
And for those who are trying to reinvent themselves, trying to be something new, to let go of the old self, this is a space where they can really let go of a whole lot of the old them by being aware of this and challenging this and getting this out of their vocabulary. It's the equivalent of, like, you know, in a health metaphor, right? This idea of stopping eating sugar, no more sugar, right? The health benefits would be enormous, right? Your skin would change, your eyesight would change, you'd lose weight, boom, 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 right? No sugar would be so great. In the identity space, self-confidence space, to eliminate virtue signaling has like all of this value, all of this benefits to it. So it's a fun one to work on.
Oh, well, and one of the things too that I keep hearing you say though, that I think is super helpful, is virtue signaling doesn't so much get in the way of other people connecting with you, so to speak, but it gets in the way of you connecting with other people. Because if you're constantly trying to protect who you are, and in just an open conversation, then your guard's going to be up and you're going to be more prone to just try to prove yourself or prove this story that you've told over and over. And somebody across the table from you could be like, oh, cool. Okay. I can relate to you on this and this, and oh, I get where you're coming from. Or, oh, that was interesting that they said that. And they're having their own experience that you're not really taking part of because you're too busy trying to protect your old identity. Is that
fair? Yes. And let me even take it one step further that you're going to love. Okay. You and I are coming out of middle-class America, right? Socioeconomic, we're white, we're middle class folks, and we know the rules of how to behave in this setting. If I were to start to swear and start to really drop the F-bomb everywhere, I know that in this setting with you, that would be a no-go, right? That wouldn't be the, I would violate the hidden rules that exist in this center, in this relationship. There are settings where swearing and language, you know, like it's not an issue at all. Like it's just acceptable, and it's just the mode of communication. Virtue signaling is like swearing for me.
Yeah.
It really, even though it's so ingrained in people, and they just kind of, it just happens, and they say this. When you're listening for it and you're watching someone hedge and protect their identity, or, you know, position themselves always in the best light because of all of this additional elements in their language and their story and whatever, I just think, you just broke all the rules of authenticity. Right. And it, for me, it just, I get it. It's fine. It doesn't offend me, but I'm not drawn towards it the way that I'm not really naturally drawn towards someone with really coarse language. Like, this is not my thing. Mm-hmm. I can still love them. I can still sit with them. I can still coach them. That's never a problem. But I don't reflect that. Yeah. That makes sense.
It does. It's making the wheels in my head kind of turn, and since like looking at it more too, I definitely have seen more of it in myself than I was aware of that I did. And I was like, well, that's interesting, and get to be able to see and how to adjust that, because I think a lot of like my virtue signals too, I was like writing them out in a list of like, okay, what are the different things I do? But all of them, like I always pictured virtue signaling to be a proof that I'm better than you kind of a thing. And so I kind of always like, I don't do that. Like, I don't think I'm better than anybody, to a point. As I started making this list, I was like,
right.
Realizing like a lot of the so-called virtue signals weren't, in my mind, weren't to say, look, I'm better than you. It was more of a protection of, I've tried so hard in this area and I'm doing my best. So please understand how like fragile this part of me is, and understand that like this is my best foot forward kind of a thing. Which I don't think, like you were saying, I don't think it does add to like another person across from me could be connecting with me as I'm doing that, but I'm not connecting with them because I'm so busy trying to protect this fragile little part of myself. And realizing that if I'm able to just take that and set it aside and just like, it's okay, then I have the peace of mind and I have the space to let new conversations, new experiences, new people ebb and flow, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't matter how they think of me or what they think of me. Or it's, I had a conversation with my husband just recently about, there was a conversation that popped up and some things that were said about him, and he was pretty irritated by it. And he was like, and so I started asking him like, why were you irritated and what's going on? And he's like, well, they said this. And I was like, but that's not true about you. Like, you're not that kind of person. So why did it bother you? And anyways, the conversation went on. And when he's like, well, I care what people think about you. Like, I wouldn't want someone to say that about you. And I'm like, well, thank you. But I actually think it's pretty cool that not everybody has to like me, that I actually like to know who doesn't like me, because then I don't have to waste my time on them anymore. I can go somewhere who doesn't like me. And it has inspired this idea. Like, we've been talking more about virtue signaling and what it means, and going back and forth between the two of us of just, it impedes our own connection. And I think that was the part that I was struggling to grasp of like, okay, but how does this play a part? So thank you. That was helpful, just to realize it gets in the way of us connecting with other people, and other people could be doing a great job at connecting with us when we miss it. So
yep.
Love that. Well, awesome. Well, is there any other things that we need to go over? I think that's a huge, valuable piece of information for me and for those listening, of just being able to move forward with connections is so huge when you come from trauma and come from mental illness, and just trying to be able to put together a healthy life forward and good connections and boundaries. And it can feel so disorienting at times of what does that mean and what does it look like? So I'm really grateful that we had this conversation, and I'm excited for those listening and how it can help them too. But is there anything else that you have before we go?
You know, one last thing. As you continue to grow? And is your stabilization across your emotional past becomes less of an obstacle and more of a platform upon which you can stand? That stabilization requires the next step. If you reach stabilization and you stay put, you will sink back into the old way, right? The stabilization that we achieve is the platform to then move on to action. And it's two or three steps away from where you are with your past, with the trauma, with the events. It's two or three actions, or two or three big steps away before it's impossible to slip back into it. And so where the models of therapy would be, well, let's go back in and keep working on this old space, is flawed, is because now, and it's clearly your vision and you understand this, it's about, well, okay, what's next? Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not burning energy. I'm not wasting mental energy and time during my day on these old things. So I got to pour that into what's next. And into my children, into my family, my profession, my whatever. And when we get up into those action items and we get distanced from this phase of stabilization, you'll just absolutely, it will be resolved in a very permanent way. Those who feel as good as you feel right now and then hit the brakes, are the ones that kind of come back and, oh, I don't know why it didn't work. You know, why couldn't I progress or whatever? It's like, well, yeah, you got to move forward. And it's fun to discover where this abundance of energy is going to open up. Yeah. So I'm excited for you.
Thank you. And it reminds me of, just the feeling of I had the same old problems over and over and over and over again in my life. And I remember after doing a lot of work and getting really good with depression and just life was good again, that I was having other struggles and I was struggling with just community issues and homeschool things and how do we do this and how do we do, and it just kind of hit me of like, oh my goodness, I have new problems. This is so cool. I'm not struggling of like how to stay out of these old patterns. I'm actually dealing with new problems. And so that's kind of what I'm hearing you say is the problems, the patterns want to keep staying. They want to keep pulling you back into what you're comfortable with, what you're used to, the way you think and how you evaluate situations. But when you can sit with it long enough and keep progressing forward until those old problems are no longer problems and instead your patterns are on new problems, then it's like, oh, okay, we're good. So that's awesome. Well, thank you, Doug. Thanks for everybody for listening too. And this really has been such an amazing opportunity for me to be able to work with Doug and be able to share my experience, our story, like, this is awesome. And I just really want those listening to know I am doing a lot behind the scenes of vetting people and making sure that I'm only bringing those that I truly do believe are making a difference and can help. And if there are anybody that I work with a little bit and I'm like, nope, this is not cool, I don't bring them on the show and I don't share them. So I just really want you guys to know I have your back. I know what it's like to need therapists, coaches, people that you can trust, and new ways of doing things that isn't keeping you stuck in the same old pattern. So thank you again for joining us. And it's just always a pleasure to have you, Doug. Thanks again.
Yep. Anytime. Thanks.
Yep. We'll see you all next time. Bye.
Thank you again for being a part of our podcast family and for the difference you are making right now in the world and in the walls of your own home. If you're wanting to support parents everywhere, you can do that by leaving a rate and review. This helps so many find connection and answers they are searching for. Also, Don't forget to go to WandaHoward.com and get your own free parenting blueprint. I love you all, and we will see you next time.